As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide supports financial professionals with client-friendly resources and innovative solutions to help create greater retirement security for their clients. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. I'm Tom Keene, along with Paul Sweeney. Join us each day for insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. You can also watch the show live on YouTube. Visit the Bloomberg Podcast channel on YouTube to see the show weekday mornings from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern from our global headquarters in New York City. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen. And always on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, and the Bloomberg Business App. He's out of the University of Virginia and the Darden School. Both Paul and I agree that Leland Miller owns the high ground on analysis of China. His claim to fame is micro-analysis away from the macro blah, blah, blah. He is with China, Beige Book. Leland, you've got some great slides that say they're working on this. What is the Leland Miller jumpstart to clear their property market disaster?
Well, I don't think they're going to clear the property market disaster, at least for not years and years and years. And part of that is because this isn't just chaos. This isn't just the economy unwinding. This is an intentional effort by the government to deleverage the property sector in a big way so that property will no longer be this powerful driving force for growth going forward, because they're worried about the credit angle. They're worried about non-performing right. loans. So they're not worried about growth. They're worried about having a more secure and stable
right.
economy.
I used to be there twice a year, sometimes even three times a year. I had a damn plaque at the M Bar at the Mandarin Hotel in Hong Kong. Leland, that world is gone. In the new world, the one thing that stayed the same is their effort to come over to a consumer society. Have they even begun to make the shift toward a more Western market society from what we knew 20 years ago?
No, not even close. And they're actually on a treadmill walking backwards. And here's why. You can talk about shifting from investment to consumption, and they have been talking about shifting from investment to consumption, but investment has gone down and consumption has not improved. It hasn't grown. The consumption incentives in society have not increased whatsoever. In fact, they've gone the other way, because what you have to do in order to empower a consumer is to give consumers more spending power, to stop financially suppressing the consumer, financially suppressing households. The entire system is based around guiding advantages to the state, to making sure that the consumer is not better off. And so they have actually haven't moved in any way in this one direction. It's been a marketing campaign for about 20 years now.
So Leland, realistically, what can the government do here? I mean, we've seen the U.S. government and other Western governments, they can have a material impact on an economy through monetary policy, fiscal policy. What can the Chinese government effectively do there for the economy?
I'm going to say something that's going to surprise you guys and probably everyone else. They don't think they're doing that bad a job. And here's why I say this. They don't really care about the stock market. Wall Street cares about the stock market, so they write a lot of notes about how important the stock market is, but Xi Jinping doesn't care about the stock market. When you look at the economy, they used to prioritize high levels of growth. They're not doing that anymore. They're worried about national security priorities like, creating a chip ecosystem, domestic chip ecosystem, finding ways around the U.S. dollar payment system in the future. That's what keeps them up at night. They're not worried about high levels of growth. So the fact that their economy is slowing quite dramatically, that isn't a major problem. What they have to make sure they don't do is have too precipitous a sudden fall off in any of these areas of the economy that creates a doom loop of confidence that gets them into trouble. But significantly slowing growth, significantly slowing stock market, none of these things are priority ones for them anymore.
So, President Xi, is there any, to the extent that this economic you know, unease continues, is there any threat to him or his position in the government that could have, I guess, wider ramifications?
It's hard to imagine. So obviously there's a point at which so many things get so bad that there's probably is a danger line. But I think it's impossible to see that from outside the country. It's probably impossible to see that from 100 feet away. So, yeah, of course, that's mm-hmm. in the distance. But it's very unlikely we see any of this affecting Xi Jinping. Like I said, the party thinks it's doing a good job. It thinks it's steering it towards a healthier course going forward, even though foreign investors aren't very happy right now.
One of your slides pervades the gloom that's out there. You use loan demand as an example. Away from what Paul and I know, away from Hong Kong, maybe six blocks of Beijing, maybe down the Bund in Shanghai, away from all that, is China distressed?
Yeah, I think that the confidence was shattered under COVID zero. And it has never returned. So, you know, last year we didn't see this, there was never the big rally, and then there was never the catastrophic, you know, collapse panic, that none of that was real in the middle of the year. But China's weakening and firms don't want to invest and they don't want to borrow and they don't want to hire and they don't want to do that because they don't like the future that they're seeing when
they
look
down
the road.
Okay, so, you know, John Taylor's out at Stanford dressed like a raisin. And he's saying, okay, this is what you do in a recession, a slowdown, et cetera. Did they have those tools available that America had in 1974 or 1981? Do they have the same tools we have?
They do, but there's some sort of dogmatic resistance against consumer side stimulus. They, you know, they don't seem to want to do that.
Okay, so but come on, Leland, it's a totalitarian regime. They have to survive. I believe you lectured me that they have to keep people employed, right? So don't sure. they lose the dogmatic at some point?
One would think, but this would be a pretty good time to lose the dogmatic right now. You know, they just keep pumping more money into the supply side, try to, you know, juice up more exports to get them out of the problem. It just doesn't work, but they haven't reversed course, at least not yet.
Hey, Leland, you know, certainly here in the U.S., the economy is driven by the consumer. 70% of the U.S. economy is consumer-driven. Give us a feel for how it is in China, consumer versus manufacturing/industrial. How tough is it on the consumer there in China?
It's terrible because, you know, the consumer doesn't, you know, the consumer has been disadvantaged due to the way that China's economic system is set up. You know, one of the ways that we've always talked about, you know, Xi Jinping moving, if he really truly wanted to incentivize, you know, the rise of consumption, then, you know, you shift assets from the state to the private sector to households. You strengthen the currency so there's more purchasing power. You create this a much more robust social safety net. All those things would give some comfort to the consumer to be able to spend more if they liked what they saw down the road.
Right.
None of those things are really being done. And so, you know, you're seeing a consumer that's just hapless and hiding from the world.
So what's your macro GDP call? I mean, you're the king of micro. You're looking at the electric grid outside Shanghai down the industrial corridor. Forget about that. What's your GDP call?
Yeah, I think that for political reasons, they haven't been able to get away from the GDP target, which they want to put in the 4 to 5 percent range, so that they're not shocking markets. They're sliding down. There's about a 3-year period in which I think they're politically sensitive about having too precipitous a fall of GDP. So they want to stick it somewhere in that 4% range, 4 to 5% range. I think when we go beyond 3 years or so, we're going to be seeing a much more precipitous fall off in growth. And maybe the leadership doesn't care about faking it anymore.
Right. Leland, thank you for the brief. Leland Miller,
the best,
with us here with China Beijing.
Inflation, market volatility, economic insecurity. Who isn't looking for greater retirement security these days? As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide helps millions of people invest in their financial futures. With client-friendly resources and innovative solutions, Nationwide supports financial professionals so they can help clients feel more confident in their retirement years. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business.
You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
We're in the middle of a great experiment, and this guest is the number one guest on the experiment we're doing worldwide with Bloomberg Surveillance. Paul Sweeney and Tom Keene are committed to the new distribution, which is YouTube. It's YouTube Bloomberg Podcasts. They gave me the numbers yesterday. I'm humbled at how it's growing. We're starting from, you know, it's a brand new nascent Google YouTube thing. And this guy is the expert on saying, we're going to watch TV, but this is the way we're going to watch it. This is the guy that goes back to Madison Avenue and Mad Men and all the rest of it. And what Brian Weezer says, Paul, I'm sorry. It's absolutely gospel on YouTube.
Absolutely. Been reading his stuff, following his work for a very long time. Brian Weezer, Madison Wall, he's a principal there. Hey, Brian, thanks so much for joining us here. I think last night our good friends at Walt Disney Company had a pretty solid quarter here. They laid out a path to profitability for the streaming business. They announced a bunch of new kind of deals with some sports streaming stuff. What did you take away from Disney over the last 12 hours?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, first of all. I don't really know fully what to take away from that call yesterday, because there is a bit of a bet the business approach that they might be taking or not. It's hard to tell on this sports app that they're trying to develop. And really, I think that's it can't be understated how potentially important it is. It could be a nothing burger, so to speak, or it could be an everything burger, because it's not clear to me how exactly they're going to thread this needle to figure out how they're going to find an elusive group of people who both love sports enough that they're willing to pay probably large-ish number for that service per month, but they don't currently have pay TV.
Yeah,
like, I don't know if this elusive creature exists. To get that person to subscribe, they may have to reduce the price so much that they accelerate the demise of their linear services.
It feels like, Brian, if you look across the media landscape, that you know it's just a matter of time before the linear business, as we know it, as we everybody, all our listeners and viewers, grew up with, that really is a thing of the past. It is gone. And it just feels like, listening to the call last night from Disney, that they've made that call and they're going to go all in on this streaming business. And I guess this deal with Paramount and Fox is kind of an interim step,
alluding,
I guess.
Who's the guy, the activist going after Disney?
Peltz.
Peltz. Yeah. Peltz is saying there's a regulatory issue. I agree. I'm an amateur on this. But I'm sorry, the government's going to let all these people merge into one sports comedy combine, Paul?
What do you think, Brian? I mean, do you think there is exactly any regulatory risk for some of these media companies coming together with their sports programming at the very least?
I mean, this is one of the many, many unknowns. If in 2018, let's remember, the reason why Fox sold its entertainment business to Disney was because of their fear of Facebook investing in sports rights in India initially, and eventually everywhere else. That was the catalyst for that transaction. And then Disney could not actually consummate the transaction, including all the RSNs and the other sports properties, right? Like, they couldn't because of this issue. And that was in a Trump administration. It's not like the competition is that much different than it was then, except Facebook's out, Amazon's in much more, right?
Well,
I'm skeptical.
Just because of time, Brian, to sum up here, do you think we are going to see this combination?
I have no idea. The fact that they didn't have, we haven't really heard much from the distributors yet.
Right.
I see from the Wall Street Journal that the sports leagues were in the dark. I really don't know how to take it.
Yeah, Brian, I got to rip up the script here. All my management, all the people around me are saying, just shut up, Tom, and ask Brian about YouTube. Okay, like, here's, you know, Cocomelon. Okay, kids watch Cocomelon. I know this. You know, it's how I babysit. It's how I babysit the grandchildren. We watch Cocomelon. They used to watch Cocomelon on Netflix. Now they watch Cocomelon on YouTube. I got kids, Brian Weezer, addicted to YouTube. We're doing YouTube here at Bloomberg Surveillance. In 5 years, Brian Weezer, is the only game left in town YouTube?
No, but a big share of it. I mean, I estimated this past week they spent maybe $23 billion on content last year. So I hope you're getting a good chunk of that.
Well, I am. I mean, what do the streamers do? What does Paul Sweeney's world do about YouTube?
I think it's an important, let's call it it's a tenth of the media industry by itself, right? Like, I think it's a really important compliment. And for a lot of people, it's a primary way to
That's
consume
like
content.
Gunsmoke, when I
Back
was
in
a kid.
bed, right?
It's like CBS and Gunsmoke.
Hey, Brian, if I'm a Disney investor, am I really primarily a theme park investor?
I don't think that's the catalyst right now. I think that theme parks, and I haven't really looked close at the theme park business since I was an analyst covering this stock, but it's an important part, but it's not the story that's really driving it right now
Yep.
because so much of their cash flow is dependent on the TV business, which goes back to your view on what exactly is this initiative going to be? Is it going to actually take off? How much risk are they putting on themselves? It's the right long-term strategy, to your point earlier. And if you believe in like a 50-year business investment, absolutely they should be doing this. But it doesn't mean their economics are going to work out very well,
Right.
which was the issue with Disney Plus.
Your thoughts on Super Bowl advertising? I mean, is the thing peaked out? I mean, Brian, what was it, seven? I thought it was
Seven
7 million
million.
for a 1 minute
No, you're
commercial
30
for 30
seconds behind.
seconds.
No.
So it's 14 million dollars a minute. Brian, your thoughts as we go to this soiree?
It's still an incredibly effective medium. It's still there is nothing like it in terms of the reach capacity, the water cooler effect. It's really important that the campaigns around the commercials are really strong and they're not just celebrity
Right.
spectacles.
Brian, will you watch us on YouTube? Bloomberg Podcast. We need one more person this morning. Okay.
Absolutely.
Thank you, because we're working on it. Brian Weezer,
He's
their
an
expert.
influencer before there were
He oh, he's a
influencers.
very
Yeah.
big yeah. That's actually wicked true.
Yep.
Yeah, Brian Weezer there, Madison Wall, just outstanding on all this confluence of what we're living with each and every day. Joining us now on radio, it's a sight to behold, even better on YouTube, wearing the garb of the great Willis of the San Francisco 49ers. The retiring Christopher Ailman joins us now from Kelsters. And what's important here is with that ginormous hunk of money, he's delivered a total return. Christopher, you have been instrumental in common sense with big piles of money. What's your number one advice to the team that replaces you at Kelsters in June? How do you handle those gazillions of dollars?
Well, Tom, first off, it's an incredible pleasure to speak to you again, and thank you for letting me join in the show. I'm glad to be part of it. And thank you for that kind introduction. Number one piece of advice is simple. What you've always said, don't fight the Fed. Follow the Fed. And, I got to say, in here, Tom, the markets seem to be fine with 5%. They can
Right.
stay there for a while.
So, I mean, and Chris, that kind of goes to it. I mean, we saw that performance that just amazed a lot of people in November and December, and we've kind of had a pretty solid January to start the year here. Did we take some of the 24 performance late last year?
Oh, I got to think so. I mean, goodness, we got way too far ahead, Paul. You saw that. Expecting six cuts. I mean, that basically implied that we were going to have a recession in 2024. Way too far ahead. Markets got to be choppy in here. But I think we, realistically,
Right.
this week, people are asking themselves, gee, could the Fed stay at five for a good chunk of this year? And maybe that's okay. We're hitting record highs. Earnings are
Right.
okay.
You started in the trenches at Sacramento. You went to Washington State. Now you're running Kelsters with, what's the total portfolio,
I got
Chris? Is
327.
$327.
That's billion, Tom.
That's not trillions.
No,
That's
it has to be with a
billions.
B. But that's for all
Okay.
the state teachers.
Yeah.
I mean,
So,
he's managing the state teachers' retirement money.
what do you do with the Magnificent Four, Five, and Six, including the asterisk that it's the culture of your California? I mean, you gotta own them because it's what your people are living out in California. What do you do with the Magnificent Six?
Tom, we're the market. I gave up on active management a long time ago. We're active in small caps, but in the US, we're mostly passive. We own the market, so we own them
So
at market
you
weight.
own them. I mean, right now in active management, this is a huge issue, folks, where they're under owned on Microsoft, Nvidia. They're all moving so fast.
Yep.
Can you keep up with correct ownership as a passive investor, Chris, or are you always behind?
No, we're right on, spot on. I run it internally. I have my own team, so they are 100% focused on it. They don't have to run 10 or 20 indexes. They've got their own accounts, and we nail it every day, and they're right on top of it.
So important.
I'm worried, Tom. This feels a lot like the Nifty 50 all the way back in the 60s and 70s. It feels like 01, 02, but the earnings are real this time, so it could stay this way for a while.
Hey, Chris, one of the concerns out there, one of the headwinds out there, and I don't think people have a real good handle on it, is commercial real estate and what it means for the economy, what it means for the banks. I mean, you've got some issues in some of your markets out there in California, as we do here on the East Coast. How do you and your team kind of frame out commercial real estate? Is it big enough to be material?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, yesterday we ran in our risk allocation committee, we talked about the mid-center and mid-sized banks that are heavily exposed to commercial real estate. But even within commercial real estate, Paul, you got to think about if they've got warehouses and apartments, they're okay. Good. If it's an office portfolio, then you've got to be very worried. But I said last year on the radio on your show that I thought real estate would be down, commercial office would be down about 20%. It's been about that range. Write-downs have been slow. It's been dropping about 5% a quarter. Our office portfolio has gotten hurt as well. But in turn, real estate, while it was soft last year, you have other parts of the four food groups, as we like to say, that have done really, really well. So you've really got to dig down within those banks that are exposed to commercial real estate and figure out what type and who's really exposed to office in the B and the C city locations. Those people are getting hurt.
Yep, absolutely. So you and your team, Chris, based in Sacramento, of course, the state capital, but you're awfully close to Silicon Valley. And a lot of folks are saying, boy, those guys have been kind of quiet in terms of venture capital, private equity. You know, we talk a lot about AI. Do you think we're going to see your friends down in Silicon Valley get a little bit more active in 24?
I think so. I'm starting to see the private equity market unfreeze for the first time. Partly because they want to raise money, so they've got to kick back some distributions. And not a few IPOs. We had a little bit of Merger Monday start up in the fall. It needs to come back in here for that market to really open up. But I think you're going to continue to see innovation out of Silicon Valley. It is an amazing place. But innovation in Brooklyn and in other spots of the USA as well. So you're going to see some new ideas. But unfortunately, particularly with AI, the biggest firms that can make the investment are the ones that are going to dominate. So these 6-7, as Tom said, are going to continue to grow and be the leaders.
Chris Hillman, I want you to talk about the greater retirement failure of America from the Employment Retirement Income Security Act of 1974. As you know, Roger Ferguson at TIA Cruff has provided great leadership on this. If you could amend the American retirement failure, what's the first thing you'd do?
Boy, I would try to aggregate either the assets or the liabilities. I think that's really been the thing that a defined benefit provides, is where we lump together the liabilities, spread it over people who live a really long time and people who live a short time. The asset management side, you know, the 401k market generally trails us by a full percent.
By 100
basis
points.
It's mostly the fees.
Okay, but this is critical. Are you telling me defined contribution is a failure and we've got to get back to some hybrid contribution defined benefit program, or do we go back to what our parents knew?
Tom, we go back to a hybrid. We go back to a mix. You know, the problem with the 401k, and Roger's spot on, and I've been saying it for years, is people don't invest early enough. The time value of money is powerful. A defined benefit forces you to put money away the first day you start working. A 401k, an average kid starts with a minimum and doesn't start putting money away until they're 50 and it's too late.
Yep.
The power of investing, and you know it, is the time value of money. It's the eighth wonder of the world, compounding of interest. So that's what we have on our side, professional management, aggregation of the liabilities. I've got over 450 teachers that are over 100 years old getting a pension.
Wow.
That's very cool.
And you're risking your 401k, Tom. Like you said, you can outlive your money.
Right. I got 1 minute left. Brock Purdy, can he do it? You got to be kidding me. Last guy drafted in the NFL, you got to be rooting for the 49ers. I mean, help
me. He's been amazing. I don't know, Tom. The last two games I'm still stressed from the last two games. We'll see which team shows up. I think it's going to come down to the coaches. I'll take Shanahan over Spagnuolo. He's pretty good, but I'm worried about Steve Wilks and our defense against Andy Reid.
Chris Ehlman.
Patrick Mahomes.
With William Gross rooting for the 49ers. Chris Ehlman, thank you so much for wisdom on America's retirement at Kelsters.
Inflation, market volatility, economic insecurity. Who isn't looking for greater retirement security these days? As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide helps millions of people invest in their financial futures. With client-friendly resources and innovative solutions, Nationwide supports financial professionals so they can help clients feel more confident in their retirement years. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Today's front page headlines. She knows a rock. She's looking at Under Armour. Lisa Mateo, what do you got?
All right, we're talking about the Super Bowl. What else, right? Okay, so
the
Wall Street Journal.
Do you think The Rock is in a box in the 50-yard line?
Oh, most definitely.
Yeah, I mean, he's in one of those, like, Taylor boxes.
I know. I'm waiting for the cutaway shots.
You're waiting for the invite.
Yes, that too. So here's the question for you I have for both of you. Would you pay to watch a Super Bowl? They're talking about possible pay-per-view options. Would you pay?
Is this like Peacock? Is this what they're
talking about? Yeah. And I mean, Jason Gay at the Wall Street Journal has this article, and he's plugged in. But I don't know. I don't think it's a national treasure. Yeah. You
like
can't
boxing.
Put it behind a pay-per-view.
No, like boxing.
Like boxing.
Yes.
Okay.
Like WrestleMania.
Not Peacock,
boxing.
$6.
No.
Like
Manny
Pacquiao.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You don't
Pacquiao.
Know who Manny Pacquiao
I sure
is.
I do.
Trust me. I know who Manny Pacquiao is because there's a case of the beer from Manila that I have
really?
To drink.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That's right. I forgot. Yeah.
Manny.
But I can't imagine they would put this national pastime of the Super Bowl.
But they're saying, you know what? It has the ability to reach 100 million plus people.
How much would that be? Super Bowl.
Oh my God.
Like
I don't know because you'd be giving up all that advertising. 100 and something.
They would probably keep the commercial because that's what people watch for,
I know.
Right?
Yeah.
The
so this is a beautiful business right here, the way it is. Don't mess
you
with it.
You should see in my bedroom when the Western light comes in and it glances off the portrait of Manny Pacquiao. It's just great. What do you got next?
Okay, we talked about this yesterday. Andrew Murphy from Gene Munster on about the Apple Vision Pro, okay, the headset. Now, it went on sale, right? He was talking about how much it was, about $3,500. But here's the thing. It's created a resale market. So now you have Vision Pro showing up on some Asian marketplaces asking prices as high as $6,300.
Yeah. What do you think?
I mean, it's this scarcity value. It's the early adopters.
Correct.
You know, it's
correct.
All the tech geeks out there that have to have the latest thing, and God love them. And, you know, if you're into that kind of stuff, this is going to be big because anytime Apple gets into a product category, whether it's the phone or the watch, you know it's going to be a step above. And I think a lot of people
and I said yesterday, I got the iPod.
Yep.
The little thingy. I got that wrong. But Andrew, with Gene Munster, Colgate guy, put it between the watch and the iPad.
Right. In terms
that's
of
a big market.
That could be a big market.
That's not inconsequential.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. Next one.
I know. As a matter of fact,
This is great.
I forgot to ask him if it leaves a mark on your face when you take them off.
Good
that's
point.
What I want to know. All right. So we're going on to the New York Times right now. They have a story out about the record heat. Like today, we have a stretch of 50-degree weather in New York in February.
Yep.
I mean, it's crazy, but we're talking worldwide. Okay. So this is from the European Union Climate Monitor. January, the eighth month in a row, global temperatures blew past records. The hottest January on record. And this is coming off of last year, which the Earth's warmest year in over a century and a half. So you see the trend kind of here. Even the hottest January for the oceans, which is a big thing because those sea surface temperatures, warmer oceans provide
I just
more
did the polar plunge down in Seagirt, New Jersey last Saturday.
Warm.
It was 41 degrees. So I don't know where they're getting their water. But yeah, I know. I've seen the data. It's just, it's incredible. You know, I don't know. I'm going to leave it for the smarter people
well,
and
here's
Davos
the smarter person.
To figure this out.
You guys, here's the one person, whether you're for or against this is the guy working his heart on this is anybody else. His name is Michael Mann. He's so an academic demand. I think he's been at like 10 schools in the last 8 years or so. He's out of Berkeley and Yale University, and smart. Michael Mann owns a High Ground. And he just says, Lisa, to your good point of bringing this up, the fact is there's no snow in Central Park. Where'd we get a dusting this year? What'd you see out in the climbs, the mountains of New Jersey?
Yeah, I mean, nothing. I mean, if you want to ski, you have to go. I mean, they're making snow up in New England, but, you know, the real snow is out west because they're getting those huge storms out on the west coast. And we saw the flooding coming in Southern California, but it's just, feet after feet after feet of snow up in the Sierra, right. And getting that out west. So it's climate change, I guess, is how I've come to understand it, as opposed to, global warming. It's climate change. Stuff's changing.
Well, yeah.
The data is the data. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a scientist.
I'm going to look at Michael Mann's work, and I'll put something out on LinkedIn on that. I think he's done some great things. And there's a great primer on this from Oxford University, a real short read that really gives you some focus on it. And I get it. It's a really it's a contested issue.
Yeah. I've been an argument. Bloomberg 15 years, so I think I finally understand it's just the data. Just show the data, and then you decide. And the data I look at says, temps are going up and things are getting more volatile.
Not to sell his worship. I was at Paris with Mike Bloomberg, with the esteemed people, Francine Lacroix, leading our coverage. And what Mike and others folks are doing, they're saying, look, all this big macro stuff, China, U.S., nobody's getting together. If we're going to solve this and control this and manage it, we're going to do it on a smaller city by city.
That's right.
I'm sorry. Are the roofs white? You know what? It works. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be open to debate. And of course, I'm not going to mince words. We got a rocket scientist with Bloomberg Green in London.
Yep.
I don't have his name in front of me right now, but on coal and on the rest of it as well. And I got to be honest. It devolves back right now to China. To Leland Miller's
right,
China.
Yeah, it does.
And what they're doing there. Thank you, Lisa. Greatly appreciate the headlines today.
This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast, bringing you the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. You can also watch the show live on YouTube. Visit the Bloomberg Podcast channel on YouTube to see the show weekday mornings from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern from our global headquarters in New York City. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen, and always on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, and the Bloomberg Business App.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.